Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is WTIC's Law Talk, a project of the Hartford County Bar Association. If you have a legal question, call now, 860-522-WTIC or 800-966-WTIC. And now, it's time for Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to Law Talk. I am Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association, and it's great to be back with you live. Last couple of weeks had to be pre-recorded because of some scheduling. I am back. I hope you are also. And I'd just like to remind you that we're here from now until 1 o'clock. The whole purpose of this program is to provide you legal information, some advice, some guidance that will help you navigate those pitfalls that encounter out there in the legal world. It affects all of us sooner or later, one way or another. Best way to do this is to let us help you on the air, because when you do so, you're allowing us to help a bunch of other folks also, some of whom are going to have very similar issues. How do you do that? Well, you phone us, and you can phone us anytime between now and 1. Better to do it earlier rather than later. The number is 860-522-WTIC, also known as 522-9842. The toll-free number is 1-800-966-WTIC, and that's also, guess what, 1-800-966-9842. So if it's easier to use numbers instead of letters on your device, there you have it. As I mentioned, we're here until 1 o'clock. We'd love to hear from you, and if you're interested in giving us a call, give us a call earlier rather than later, because that gives us more of an opportunity to give your issue the attention that it deserves. Now, in the meantime, we've got a bunch of carefully curated issues that we're going to be bringing up. These are fresh. They're contemporary. Every single one of them involves legal issues with a very strong local flavor. And I think you're going to find they're going to be interesting. And so let me give you just a little rundown here as we're getting rolling here. First of all, spam, phone calls, robocalls. Don't you just hate those? And then when you tell them, put me on the no-call list, doesn't seem to do any good at all. Well, there's a new lawsuit filed in the federal court here in Connecticut that is designed to try and put a stop to a large portion of that. And you will be completely surprised as who it is who's filed that lawsuit. We'll talk about that, and we'll tell you how that's going to play out, and that will be very interesting. Coming up after that, because of the fact that we are followed by Pet Talk, we're going to do a piece called Dog Law, and there's two parts to it. Dog Law Part 1, the dog owner beats the government. Dog Law Part 2, dog owner loses to the government. If you are a dog owner, or if you're a pet owner, or if in fact you have a neighbor who is a dog owner that you may have some issues with, these are really good segments for you to stick around and make sure that you listen because you find it helpful. Following that, we've got an issue that was addressed by the Connecticut Supreme Court just recently. So the question for you, dear listeners, is what happens to the women-only workout areas in private gyms. So Chief Justice Richard Robinson wrote a decision on that. We'll talk a little bit about that. Whether he's still doing it or not, I'm not so sure. But when I had business with him when he was on the trial bench, he and his wife were both very, very active karate participants and competitors. So I suspect that he is probably very familiar with gyms, perhaps more so than the rest of the Supreme Court justices. Anyway, we'll see what the purpose of that original exemption was, what happened at the trial court, and then what the Supreme Court did with that, because it may be a little bit different than you might have expected. Now, finally, if we have time to get to it, there's a case pending in the Judicial District in Litchfield, and I have to tell you, this one is a total head-scratcher for me. Some of you are going to find the fact situation hilarious. Some of you are going to find it outrageous. Some of you are going to be perplexed, and the decisions that made are going to be really curious, and you wonder how they were made. Not to tease you too much, but it involves marital infidelity, it involves sexually transmitted diseases, and it involves claims against homeowners insurance policies. So with that in mind, stick with us. We're going to get to that, and we will. This is a real case. It is a live case. It's not something that we created for teaching purposes, and so we'll get into that. But starting off, let's attack the business about the robocalls, the spam calls. I think virtually every one of us has had to deal with those at one time or another. Well, just recently, within the last 2 weeks, there was a lawsuit filed in the United States District Court here in Connecticut, and the plaintiff, and this is aimed directly at spam calls and robocalls. Now, the plaintiff, you think, would be some consumer agency or some governmental agency. Not so. The plaintiff is Frontier Communications. Frontier, the successor to the Southern New England Telephone Company, the old landline company, and a couple of its other entities. So what are they doing? Well, they're suing a company in Wyoming and its sole member, who is a gentleman named Singh, S-I-N-G-H. I think his first name is Devinder Singh. So why are they suing them? Well, here's the story. The background on this is that the telecommunications industry has not really ignored all of the pushback about robocalls. It's created something called an industry traceback group, okay? And the purpose of this group is to create a traceback portal so suspected illegal robocalls can be traced back through the various networks that they come over until the originator is identified. Now, membership in the industry traceback group is not required by the federal regulators, although it's strongly encouraged. And this complaint says that most of the big folks all participate. Well, conspicuous by its absence is this little guy in Wyoming, which is called Mobi, M-O-B-I Telecom, LLC, Mr. Singh's company here. Mobi Telecom refuses to participate, and as a result, it has become the portal of choice for the people that originate these robocalls. Now, I know that they irritate the daylights out of all of us. Let me just give you a little bit of scope on this, and then we'll talk. And then we're going to have to take a break, and we'll explain it a little bit more, okay? It estimates that there are more than 159 million robocalls per day that land, okay? The Federal Communications Commission itself estimates that these cost consumers $3 billion a year, not even counting monetary loss, which is caused by the fraud or the scams that are perpetrated through those robocalls. So we're going to explain exactly what Frontier is doing here, why it is that it has standing to do this, and how we can all hope for a good outcome. So we're going to do that. We're going to take your phone calls at 860-522-9842, 1-800-966-WTIC, and we're going to do all of that right after this.
And now, back to Law Talk on WTIC, News Talk 1080.
All right. Good. Welcome back to Law Talk. Glad to have you with us. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association, and this is your Saturday noontime entertainment slash educational portal. Number of different things we're discussing today, but we always have time for your phone calls regarding legal matters, not political, but legal. The phone number is 860-522-9842. Toll free, 1-800-966-9842. So we were talking about this lawsuit by, of all people, Frontier Communications, and the target is this company in Wyoming, which appears to be the outlier, the company that refuses to join the telecom industry traceback group and has therefore become the portal of choice for all of these robocalls, scam calls. By the way, this article says that 90% of them originate overseas. So why is Frontier doing this? Couple of reasons. It's not just out of the goodness of their heart. In its lawsuit, Frontier estimates that each robocall costs Frontier $10. Now, with 159 million per day, even though Frontier has just a portion of that, it's pretty easy to see that there's some serious money involved. The weapon of choice here is the Connecticut Unfair Trade Practices Act, and that basically alleges that the methods of competition are unfair, deceptive, and that is the basis for it. The additional attraction here: the court has the authority to award punitive damages and attorney's fees to the prevailing party. As the general counsel for Frontier stated, the goal here is to try and deter other companies like Mobi Telecom LLC and others from doing the same thing and not participating in this portal, which allows the companies in the industry to trace back the source of these. So even though robocalls are illegal, even though the law makes it clear that if you sign up for a do not call registry, they're supposed to honor it, it hasn't happened. We are all rooting for Frontier on this one. Hopefully it will help to clean up the bad actors in the industry. I suspect that Mobi Telecom is not the only one. So we'll watch that and we'll let you know as time goes on what happens with that lawsuit. Changing gears now from phones to pets, okay? I told you that we're going to visit dog law, and we've got part one and part two. Part one, the dog owners win. Part two, not so much. So what is he talking about? Well, I'll tell you. The first one is a recent case, and this comes from the town of East Haven. And the name of the case is actually Town of East Haven versus 10 Dogs. So let me tell you what this one is about, okay? The facts in this case is that the town of East Haven was sent to the home of Carmen Garcia Sancho, okay? She was the keeper of these dogs. And there was a complaint that the dogs were preventing the police from doing an investigation or something of that nature. So they find that there are two dogs that are present. These are golden retrievers, one male, one female. In a back bedroom in the house, there are 10 puppies, and it's clear that they are very, very young. The animal control officer feels that they're living in conditions of filth. They're probably neglected. And so they issue what's called a seizure order, okay? And this is based on a specific state statute that allows them to, quote, seize, close quote, dogs under certain circumstances, okay? So they basically testified that the golden retriever male was confined to the fenced backyard. It was filled with trash and debris. The female golden retriever in a back bedroom ate newborn puppies. And there was a little space heater, didn't appear to have food or anything of that sort. So they go ahead and they seize the dogs. Step two is that the owners have to post a bond for the feeding and care of the animals if they're going to litigate this. And they posted the bond, and there was a hearing at court. And the court had to apply a test to determine whether or not these animals were neglected or cruelly treated. Okay? The statute doesn't define that. So they analogize to the criminal statutes because it is a criminal offense to treat animals in that fashion. So they said that if you deprive them of the necessary sustenance, you fail to supply them with wholesome air, food, or water, failure to provide them with proper food, drink, or protection from the weather, those are all elements of the two particular charges of neglect or cruelly treated. Well, in this case, the owner of the dogs was an 18-year-old, and he said that back home in Ecuador, he had considerable experience raising them, that while he was away at school, his mom took care of the dogs. Very significantly, the mother, who was pregnant, had been to the vet 10 days before, was found to be in relatively good health. She had fleas, and she had one other congenital defect, which was clearly not the fault of the owners. And so when the two adult dogs and the pups get seized, they take them to the vet, and the vet says, hey, these animals are basically healthy. Both of the adults got fleas, but the pups are healthy, except for one, and he had some congenital defect, and the vet recommended euthanasia. So at the hearing, the judge had to decide whether or not the circumstances met the definition of neglected or cruelly treated. The judge held that they did not, and that therefore the town had to return the dogs to the owners. Now, the second part of this was that the town said, well, we've spent all this money for care for the animals. We want $15 per day per dog, and the vet bill was $627.20. And the court looked at the statute and said, well, this all comes into play. You're exactly right, but it comes into play if and only if I find that the animals are neglected or cruelly treated. I have just found that the town failed to meet its burden of proving that. Therefore, the claim for monetary reimbursement is denied. The animals are ordered returned to the owners. So that is dog law part one, where the owners win. We've got a minute or two. We're going to get started on dog law part two, and this one is different, okay? This is an owner of a dog. He's 83 years old. He obtains a dog from Florida, brought the dog to live with him here in his home in Fairfield, and the home is occupied by him and his 81-year-old wife who has Alzheimer's. Well, the dog bit a jogger who was jogging by the house and was not harassing or intimidating the dog or provoking it, and so the dog gets taken to animal control pending a possible disposal order, and while it's in the kennel, it bites a kennel worker. So at this point, they issue a second order, and neighbors are concerned about the animal. So they do an investigation, and they discover that the dog, who is a 100-pound German Shepherd named Jack, was previously known as Semper in Florida, and that he bit some kid in Florida also. So in this particular case, we've got euthanasia or euthanizing orders times two, and the plaintiff owner appealed to the Commissioner of Agriculture. They had an administrative law hearing. The owner lost. He appealed to the Superior Court. They upheld the decision of the Commissioner of Agriculture, and they appealed that to the appellate court. And now he's limited. He's got to show that they've somehow abused the due process rights of the owners by acting unreasonably or illegally or arbitrarily. The appellate court said, no, you have not shown any of those. So while we have to break in just a moment for news, our dog law segment for today is 1-1. The first case, owners win, and the two golden retrievers and the pups all go back to the owners. The town does not get paid. Second case, the German Shepherd, Jack, formerly known as Semp, is probably no longer with us, despite the fact that a tremendous amount of money was invested. Once again, happy to see you on the phones. We'll get to Andrew and Glastonbury on the backside of news, sports, and weather. Stick with us. We're here until 1 o'clock. I am attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association, and this is Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
To Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080.
I'm the law, law
indeed. Welcome back to the second half of Law Talk for this beautiful February afternoon. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. We are here until 1 o'clock. Delighted to hear from you. Take your calls, answer your questions. We're going to get to Andrew and Glastonbury in just a second. We'd love to help you out also. The phone number is 860-522-9842, 1-800-966-9842. Better to call a little bit earlier than later just to make sure we can give you the full amount of time that your issue deserves. That said, let's go to Andrew. Andrew, are you with us?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for your patience holding on over the news there.
Okay. The situation is such that it's a matter of a small amount outstanding tax with the interest, adding on the interest, it's now outstanding at $33. But my basic question is, has the town assessor's office the right to keep this amount on books, this outstanding tax on personal business property goes back to a 2011 grand list, and my father-in-law died in 2012, and when I informed the assessor that way back in 2013 or 2012, I informed them that the owner of the business died, they still insist keeping the amount on the books, and they are mailing the bill to us, which is a different address than where he lived.
Okay.
So do they have the legal authority to keep it on books?
Okay, so that's a good question, Andrew. First of all, we're talking about a personal property tax for a personal property owned by a business. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right, and this was your late father-in-law?
Yes.
Now, did he do business under the form of either a corporation or a limited liability company, or do you know if he was what we refer to as a sole proprietor?
Most likely sole proprietor. I really wouldn't be able to correctly answer
okay.
that. But
that's fine. Let's assume he was a sole proprietor. At the time of his... I'm sorry, go ahead.
It was a one-person operation.
All right. While many people that are one-person operations do choose to form a business entity, not everybody does, and it's entirely possible that he was a sole proprietor. So we're going to assume that that's the case. Now, if at the time your father-in-law died, he still owed these taxes, the tax collector had a claim against your late father's estate, but not against you folks. So if he did not make the proper filings, did your late father-in-law have an estate that was formally opened?
No, because it was bankrupt. So we never filed anything with the town assessment department.
Okay, when you say it was bankrupt, you're not referring to an actual decision by the United States Bankruptcy Court. You're just saying that the
No.
assets were less than the liabilities or something of that nature?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So they don't really have the right to go after another person for the debts of your father as a sole proprietor. The proper thing would have been to advance a claim against his estate. Creditors do have the right to open an estate when somebody does not, so that they have a platform to advance their claim. Now, this is your father-in-law, and so you're not an heir at law of your father-in-law. And since no estate was opened, we know that there was no will. Therefore, they have no business bothering you personally. Was this your spouse's father who died?
Yes.
And are they bothering her on these bills, or who is the person to whom these bills are addressed?
The last one that came was in his name and our address, but he lived at a different address.
Okay. This is what I think you ought to do. I think that a letter should be sent to the tax collector for the town. Is this a town of Glastonbury or is it a different town?
Different town.
Okay. Send a letter to the tax collector of the town that is sending you these bills. Point out that the man died, put in the date of his death, state that his estate, they had the right to make a claim against his estate. They apparently did not do so, and that you, neither you nor your spouse have any legal obligations for this. If they continue to pursue it against you, you're going to consider it harassment, and you're going to take whatever legal steps are necessary. And send it to him. I would like you to send it to him, surface mail, certified mail, return receipt requested, so you have a copy to prove they got it. Okay, even though email is the way everybody does things, I want something that somebody signed it showing that they actually received it. And if that doesn't put a stop to it, let us know in a future show, and I'll tell you a couple of other things that you might be able to do. But I think that's the way to address it, Andrew.
But does that also mean that even if they receive this letter, they'll keep this balance on the books forever?
No, you should also put in the letter that the balance should be deleted because they lost their opportunities to try to collect it by not doing anything when the opportunity was there to do so. They could have opened an estate for him, and I'm sure that given the amount involved, that was not cost effective. But they have no right to harass a third party for the debt of a person who died a number of years ago, respecting personal property he owned in a business he operated as a sole proprietorship. Okay? So I hope that's helpful, Andrew. Put all of that into the letter. Make sure you keep a copy. I recommend sending it certified mail so you've got somebody's signature right on there. And put in there also that you demand that they delete this from the rolls, R-O-L-L-S, of the town, delinquent tax bills. And if that still doesn't work, please give us a call on a future show, okay?
Okay, very good.
Thank you very much. And good luck with that, Andrew. And I'm sorry that they continue to bother you for someone else's debt. Okay, take care now.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. That is an unfortunate circumstance. Hopefully that will work out for Andrew. And I think we'll probably hear more from him in the future and we'll help him out at that point. This is the point in the show where I need to tell you that if you don't already have a lawyer and you're looking for some legal advice, especially beyond what we can do during the 1 hour that we have on the air here, the best bet for you is the Hartford County Bar Association's not-for-profit lawyer referral service, okay? I'll give you a phone number in a minute. That's how you contact them. Here's what you get. Here's what it costs. You get a half-hour consult with an attorney who has already been vetted, who practices in the proper areas of the law to help you with your issue, who is insured and is free of disciplinary entanglements, which is more than you can say for some of those folks advertising on billboards or on the internet. You get the half-hour consult with no further obligation whatsoever, with no hard sell at the end for anything else. However, if further legal services are desired, that's up to you and the attorney. And if you choose to go forward together, good. If you don't, that's good too. Okay, good deal. So what does this cost, you're wondering? Here's the answer. There's a one-time only fee of $35, and that goes to pay the administrative expenses. There's phone bills, there's rental, there's personnel costs, and this applies and pays a portion of those costs, okay? And that's it. But there's a little bit more to it, because if you are injured and have a personal injury claim, call them up. They will waive the $35 fee. If you are injured and you have a workers' compensation claim, same thing. Call them up. No $35 fee for you either. And finally, if you have a Social Security disability claim, and these can be tricky, they will help you with that and they will waive the $35 fee for the half hour consult there. The rest of us, it's $35 for a half hour, which is a pittance compared to what experienced attorneys charge for their billable time. So how do you reach them? You call them at 860-525-6052. That's 860-525-6052. That is the Hartford County Bar Association's not-for-profit lawyer referral service. Now, if you're listening on the internet or if you're outside the immediate area, you might be thinking, well, what can they do for me? I'm nowhere near Hartford County. Not so. This particular program is one of many all across the United States. They're built on a model that comes from the American Bar Association. They've had a number of people that have called needing legal services in California, Texas, North Carolina, Florida, and they're able to hook them up with a similar organization in those areas. So give it a try. I think you'll be glad that you did. And like I said, it's a lot better than relying upon somebody that you saw on a billboard or upon some ad in the internet. It is the Hartford County Bar Association's not-for-profit lawyer referral service at 860-525-6052. Give them a call. They'll get back to you, and I think you'll be glad that you did. We're going to have to take a break. I'm Attorney John Matulis. You're listening to Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com, streaming audio on the net.
And now, back to Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Okay, welcome back. I'm Attorney John Matulis. Law Talk is heading right up until 1 o'clock, and then it's news, sports, and weather right here on WTIC. Another segment of recent news decisions of interest. Wanted to talk to you about this one because I think it's pretty neat. What happens to the women-only workout areas in private gyms? So here's the story on this, okay? There's a firm called Edge Fitness, and it operates a number of private gyms, especially here in Connecticut. Well, Edge Fitness reached a conclusion on its own that it would be good for business if they set aside certain areas in the gym for workouts that could be used by women only. Okay. And we can all sort of give some thought to why it is that that might be attractive and why it is that might be a good selling point. So they did that. Well, a couple of bros named Chaplin and Brailsford were members of these gyms, and they filed a complaint that they were being discriminated against on the basis of sex, okay? Now, you should understand, Connecticut has what's called a Public Accommodation Act. And for our purposes, what it generally says is that it is illegal to discriminate on the basis of sex. But there's two exceptions. One of them is bathrooms, and the other one is locker rooms. So the two bros file the complaint with the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities, and there's a referee, and the referee dismisses their complaint. But for some reason that's not clear to me, the commission itself files an administrative appeal to the trial court. And the trial court has a hearing on this, and the judge acknowledges that this Public Accommodations Act, number one, prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex. Number two, has specific exceptions to this prohibition for bathrooms and locker rooms. Okay? So the trial court judge says that, therefore, exceptions could be made where there's the same gender privacy expectations in play, and found that that specifically included women's only workout areas. So this ends up going on appeal. The Connecticut Supreme Court weighs in on this, and the Connecticut Supreme Court says, hold on, we think you got it wrong. So everybody agrees it's crystal clear the Public Accommodations Act applies. Everybody agrees it's crystal clear that the prohibition against discriminating on the basis of gender does not apply to lavatories and locker rooms. Okay? But here's the difference. The court said that there is no specific exception for workout areas. And then it goes on further to say that there are ongoing and evolving understandings of the term and the concept of gender and sex. And it said that to address this issue further, especially in that context, not the job for the courts, job for the legislature. Okay, so very sound decision. Obviously, this is something that the court was not too interested in being in the forefront. And there's a whole body of jurisprudence which says that's correct. It is the legislature that makes the laws. The courts interpret them, but they don't expand them. And that was written, as I mentioned, by Chief Justice Robinson. And I knew that at one time he and his spouse were both active karate experts and competed in various competitions. So I suspect that he's got significant personal experience in gyms and locker rooms. So that is a quick look at the law and the question of what happens to the women-only workout areas at the Edge Fitness gyms. So if you've got any thoughts on that that you want to share with us, you're more than welcome to call us today or even next week if you'd like to. And if you're a woman who has a view on that, love to hear from you. If you're a guy who felt that these areas discriminated against you, love to hear from you. And if you're a person who has a particular interest in the evolving definitions of gender and sex, as the Supreme Court referenced in its decision, well, more than happy to hear from you also. Our number is 860-522-9842, 1-800-966-9842. Okay, we've got one case today that I want to go over with you. I referred to this one in the opening of the show as a head scratcher, and it certainly is. So we're going to cover this for the time that we have remaining. We may not be able to finish it, and if not, we will pick it up next week. Okay? This is a real case. It is still pending. It is being actively litigated in the Judicial District of Litchfield here in Connecticut. And even though the real names of the parties are used in the litigation, I'm going to use just their first names, and the reason for that will become apparent later, okay? So here's the cast of characters. Alyssa and Dominic are husband and wife. Dominic and Melissa work together, okay? Dominic and Melissa have an affair. Melissa has a big secret. Her big secret is that she is infected with an STD, a sexually transmitted disease. And it appears uncontroverted that she never mentioned it to Dominic. So Dominic, who is still in an active marital relationship with his spouse, Alyssa, ends up hearing the following, that Alyssa has a problem. She ends up going to her physicians. She has a diagnosis. She now has an STD. Now, we can only imagine the discussion between Alyssa and her husband, Dominic. I'm sure it was a lively evening in their home that night. Dominic probably didn't fess up to this too much because the case talks about Alyssa having gotten to his phone and discovered all kinds of heated text messages to Melissa about what did you do and things of that nature. So that's the situation that we have. So what happens next and why are we even doing this on Law Talk? Well, I'll tell you in a minute. I think that some people are going to find this hilarious. Some people are going to be offended and possibly enraged. A lot of us are going to be scratching our heads and saying, what goes on? Alyssa sues Melissa, okay, and she sues Dominic, her husband. And she claims that she was damaged. There's a claim for negligent transmission of disease. There's a claim for negligent failure to warn. And then there we have claims for infliction of emotional distress, both negligent and intentional, and a claim for public disclosure of private medical facts. She claims in the complaint, among the things that we've already discussed, that when Melissa was confronted with this, that she, guess what, took to social media. So among Alyssa's claims for damages are the things you could expect, that she has now contracted an infection, she's suffering extreme anxiety, depression, social embarrassment, humiliation, and get this one. And I'll take this one directly from the language in her complaint, okay? It's paragraph 13G. Quote, inability to leave her marriage because her field of potential suitors would be limited to men who are comfortable being intimate with and or marrying a woman with an STD, close quote. So that is the backdrop that we have here. Now, a bunch of different things that pop up, okay? First of all, this issue of privacy. She's claiming humiliation, mortification because of Melissa having taken to social media. Now, we are using first names only here, but in the complaint that Alyssa filed, in which she alleged all these things. She's using her whole first name, and the complaint alleges the town she lives in, and the summons probably alleges her home address. So the first thing is, how do you justify doing that when you chose to file in your own name? What were her options? Guess what? Why not file under a pseudonym? Jane Doe ends up with these things all the time. Well, anyway, there's a whole bunch of other issues that we're going to have to discuss. I think this stuff is fascinating. There's some head-scratching issues, and we'd love to follow up on that. But that music in the background is my cue that yet another Law Talk is coming to a conclusion, and it's time for me to say my thank yous. Thank you to those of you who have listened, especially those that have called in and allowed us to help you with your issues. Thanks very much to Anthony Dorenzo, our star producer. He is the one who makes us sound good when that happens. When it turns out that we don't, then that is my responsibility completely, and we'll see you next week.
Law Talk is presented as a public service by the Hartford County Bar Association. Its content is intended to be educational and informative, but is not considered to be formal legal opinion. If you want or need a formal legal opinion upon which to rely in decision-making, please consider formally engaging an attorney to review all relevant facts in detail and examine the pertinent law as it applies to those facts. A solid opinion means better decisions. The views expressed during this program are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of the Hartford County Bar Association, its officers, or its directors.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.